Communications disruption can mean only one thing: invasion.
You must contact me.
Negotiation? We've lost all communication.
Hello, and welcome to CO Bibbles, Babble, Bubble. Per usual, we always have a special episode here in store. That's the fun thing about this show. We try to make every single one matter. Not to say that other people's podcasts don't matter for their every single episode, but I like to imagine we have our own little sprinkling to just try to keep things a little bit unique. Anyhow, this has been a very special past 2 weeks for Star Wars fans, and specifically a very special 4 to 5 days, and that has to deal with the launch of the wonderful platform, Disney Plus. To any of my listeners out there who haven't already subscribed, which I would be very surprised given that pretty much anyone who's listening to a Star Wars podcast must be fully committed to taking in as much Star Wars content as possible. But if you haven't, go ahead and subscribe to this thing. It's great. Beyond all the wonderful Star Wars offerings, there's Marvel, National Geographic, great Disney Channel movies. It really is a lot of fun. But I want to bring it up here in this moment, because what's exciting for me as a big fan of the Star Wars prequels is the fact that Disney Plus is offering sort of the first time you see all of the Star Wars movies together on one streaming service that's easily accessible. And that, of course, includes the prequels. So what's exciting about that is younger generations of Star Wars fans, or even those who don't know they're Star Wars fans, now have access to these movies. So imagine some kid who just likes Disney to begin with, or maybe they just like Marvel, or the small crowd that subscribed just for National Geographic, and they decide to go through and really explore, well, what else is there for me to watch? Or imagine sort of the older audience, someone who grew up watching Disney Channel original movies and Disney Channel shows, and so that's why they subscribed. But they just never got around to watching Star Wars. Maybe there's some of these people who say, oh, I want to avoid things that are popular. I never read Harry Potter. I never watched Star Wars, which is fine. That's their prerogative, but now they have access to see it. They can now easily see what the fuss is all about. And what better way to start than to jump in, oh, hey, this is episode 1. So, you know, a lot of people may be getting their first time interaction with the Star Wars movies straight with the prequels, because they just see the numbering rather than thinking, oh, I should just jump into A New Hope because that was the first one that came out, or, oh, I'm going to jump into the new things and work backwards, which is fine too. So it's very exciting that a lot of folks, maybe hundreds, thousands, millions even, I mean 80 million people subscribed to Disney Plus on the first day. I don't know how many of those hadn't seen Star Wars before, but you now have a significant portion of them who are getting to experience something for the very first time. And that's incredibly exciting. And, you know, maybe a handful of them will say, oh, I really like these first three films chronologically, The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. And they may think, well, you know, I should listen to a podcast that talks about how cool these shows are. So to that crowd who searched far and wide to find a prequels appreciation podcast, welcome to the CO Bibble Babble Bubble family. We welcome you with open arms. You're welcome to do all the social media follows and whatnot. And if you have any suggestions or things you want to talk about, you know, I'm going to shamelessly plug myself here and say I'm happy to do it. But I'd like to move beyond that little particular and focus on the new show, The Mandalorian. Now, I had said early in this podcast that I was going to focus near exclusively on the movies and try to avoid the books or new TV shows or the sequels, And that was largely because I feel like there is a wide breadth of shows out there who are talking about new things. And that, I wanted to stay true to the nature of what made this show unique, which is talking about the prequels. However, The Mandalorian, as what's making me break from this trend, it's just because there's so many wonderful things about that show that tie directly to the prequels, which I wasn't necessarily expecting. At Star Wars Celebration in Chicago this past year, Jon Favreau, the director, had said he really wanted to recreate the feeling of the original trilogy, which is completely fine and something I was excited for, as were most Star Wars fans. I mean, especially given that The Mandalorian takes place after Return of the Jedi, so it's kind of a sub-sequel in the chronology. It doesn't tie to the Skywalker story at all, or so we were told. I'll get to that later. But, to see multiple nods, first in the trailers for it, which I talked about in my last episode, with the super battle droids we see for a hot second. And then with a lot of visual references and nice little callbacks. And so for me, that's terribly exciting to see that the prequels are getting, if not as much love as the original trilogy, a certain recognition that's tying together the universe further. That's been one complaint of mine with the sequel trilogy. The tie-ins to the prequels are a bit further down the road and a little more hidden, but this is a little more obvious. And it's super cool for me because, going back to what I was talking about earlier, someone could watch The Mandalorian first and foremost, because when you go onto the Disney Plus app, that's the first thing they advertise. Like, hey, our new show's up, start streaming now, 2 episodes. And someone could watch that and say, oh, what is this cool thing? How can I better understand that? And they say, oh, they may Google around, find a video for Easter eggs, and be like, oh, watch the prequels. Watch Attack of the Clones. I mean, in Attack of the Clones, you have Jango Fett. He's a very prominent character, at least in the advertising. If you look at the poster of the film, he's front bottom right. He's the same height as the heads of the main characters, which is effectively making him a secondary character. Fun fact, Count Dooku, who's the main villain of that film, doesn't even show up on the poster. It really is just a callback to how cool that Mandalorian armor is that people love about Boba Fett that was then brought up for Jango Fett. I know a lot of people don't like the Boba origin story, or feeling like it's unnecessary, or, oh, I don't want to see him as a kid. The same people, these are the same people who said, I don't want to see Darth Vader as a kid. Well, I hate to break it to you. Everybody's a kid at some point, They don't just automatically grow up into a badass. It's not like they came out of the mother's womb fully armored, fully ready to just kick ass and take names. They had to go through some sort of development to push him there. And I know everybody doesn't necessarily want an origin story, but George Lucas, who created these characters, wanted to give him that, and that was his prerogative, and I thought he did a great job. But if you don't want to watch it, fine. No one's saying you have to watch the Anakin Skywalker as a kid story or the Boba Fett as a kid story. But I'm assuming if you're listening to this podcast, you like this stuff, unless you're just wanting to find another reason to get angry at the prequels by choosing to get angry at me instead, which somebody did. But you know what? That's cool. That means we're making a splash. Anyhow, I digress. I was talking about the Mandalorian TV show, and I went on yet another prequels defense, but that's kind of what you would expect in this program. Anyhow, yes. So, The Mandalorian, in addition to just having this Jango Fett Boba Fett look, offers a great dive into Mandalorian culture post Empire, and I'm gonna bring up the Clone Wars TV show, which takes place during the prequel era and was sort of George Lucas's final project, though he wasn't directly involved prior to selling Lucasfilm to Disney. At which point, that the show was run by Dave Filoni, who is an executive, who is a producer on the Mandalorian TV show and was a director or the director of the first episode. So it's no surprise that he's bringing in some of the stuff from that Clone Wars era, which takes place between episode 2 and episode 3. And so at the time we see them, you know, the Mandalorians have this beautiful planet. They're very well developed, but they start to devolve a bit. And especially as there's a lot of inner strife that is sort of stirred up by the Clone Wars between the Republic, the Separatists, and then Darth Maul. And then Death Watch with Prey Vizsla. Then we fast forward a bit and we see a little bit of what's going on with Mandalore in the TV show Star Wars Rebels, at which point, you know, you kind of have Imperial loyalists who are running the planet while true Mandalorians are true to the cause. Mandalorians are sort of semi, not enslaved, but symbolically enslaved. And for them, a very proud people, having to suffer under the yoke of the Imperial grasp. I guess I could just say the Imperial yoke. That's just an unnecessary amount of words there, but, you know, it's very against their culture. So by the time we get to the TV show, in the first episode, we see little flashbacks of the Mandalorian, assumingly as a child, in sort of a battle sequence, at which point, you know, it's a village that's being raided. We don't see who's doing the raided, but we see, you know, good, hardworking people getting mowed down and running away and screaming, and it's sort of a violent scene. And, you know, I feel like we're made to believe that the Mandalorian's family was attacked by the Empire. Because, as we had seen in Star Wars Rebels, there's this, you know, animosity between some Mandalorians and Imperial forces. And, you know, maybe you think, oh, the Empire's bad, so let's put this little seed in here to show that, oh, the Mandalorian is a good guy because he secretly hates the Empire, and we want to associate him with that rebel identity. You know, at which point I say, why would he take a contract with them in the first place? Oh, maybe he's just that ruthless. You know, he has to put that stuff aside because he, you know, runs into the Imperial Remnant, or maybe not an official capital I, capital R Imperial Remnant, but some sort of remnants of the Empire, and Werner Herzog's character and that scientist guy with the glasses. But, you know, if these people were the ones that killed his family, I doubt he would take a contract with them. So that's why, and I looked over the internet for this to see if anybody made this claim, and I asked some of my sources, who are better versed in the Star Wars theory and Twitterverse and all that jazz, if this had been spoken for, and it had not. So this is my theory. I believe that the Mandalorian's family was not killed by the Empire, none of that stuff from the Rebels era, but actually was killed by Separatists, taking place during the Clone Wars era. We don't know how old the Mandalorian is. If his family was killed during the Imperial era, he would be no older than maybe 25, 26, maybe 30. And I think there's this idea that he's more grizzled than that. I mean, you could look at the actor, Pedro Pascal, and if you look at his age, which I don't have in front of me, and I really should have looked up, I think he's pushing 40 or is possibly older than that. And if you look at that time frame, that puts him closer to the Clone Wars era. Secondly, the fact that we don't see who it is that's shooting up his little homestead, I think is meant to be a sort of a twist. You know, that's, we're expecting, oh, the bad guys who are behind the camera are the Empire, because that's what we've always expected. You know, that's who we anticipate being evil. It's stormtroopers. You know? But the fact that they're not there, I think, is another little play. I think those are actually battle droids back there. At which point, I want to draw back to the trailer. In the trailer, for just a hot second, we saw super battle droids. And they were looking slick. You know, they weren't looking dusty or dirty or just kind of cobbled together like one would expect a droid that was decades old, not being actively used, would look. These looked like the fresh off the press. You know, clean from the factory battle droids. And I believe those battle droids are from a flashback. And we're going to realize it's the, excuse me, it's the droids that killed his family. And it's the droids that took down his town. Now, Reed, you may be saying, this is a lot of supposition. What is it actually based on? You're putting pieces together. Well, there is in evidence in the show a distaste by the Mandalorian of droids. And I'm not just talking about him not liking IG-11, because the whole IG-11 bit, and that, for those of you who don't remember the name, IG-11 is the bounty hunter droid that the Mandalorian teams up with for a hot second, who's voiced by Taika Waititi, and then who he ends up betraying a couple minutes later when he rescues the Yoda baby. But you could just write off that distrust or frustration as simply being, oh, this battle droid, or sorry, this bounty hunter droid is just another rival for the same bounty I'm after, you know? So it's, that's not necessarily the best evidence of, oh, he hates droids because they killed his family. No, I mean, this guy's showing up on his kill. But there could be some of that. This is also why he doesn't like the guy, because the droids killed his family. But no, the real piece of evidence I point to is towards the very beginning of the first episode, the Mandalorian walks up to the flute guy, the flute taxi guy. You know, he says, oh, I need a ride to the Badlands or whatever it's called where his ship is. And the guy plays his flute and a little speeder comes up. And that speeder has an R2 unit. You know, the friendliness, most reliable little droids out there. I mean, this is what R2-D2 is, R4. And, you know, he's there and the bounty and the Mandalorian, straight and simple, says, no droids. Now, why would you not want a droid like that? I mean, a person you're stuck talking to, or there's room for human error. There's room for just possibly, you know, that guy bribing the bounty who you've kidnapped. There's a lot of issues surrounding working with a person when you could just work with a little taxi cab droid. But he was insistent, no droids. And I believe it's because he's still suffering from that PTSD and distrust of droids having killed his family. So when you consider that and then go back to the IG-11 thing, you realize, you know, there is some of that, oh, IG-11 is just showing up to get in on my business, as previously mentioned. But there also is, oh, great, it's a droid. I don't like these people. I don't trust them because they can turn on you. And they've done horrible things to me and to my people as Mandalorians. And so we'll see if this theory turns out to be incorrect or just totally right, at which point I would laugh because I'd be, hey, I thought of this while driving to Tai Chi one day. You know, in all likelihood, we're going to find out the people killing his family were indeed the Empire. Or, you know, maybe it was some rival gang. Or it's been hinted that there are going to be some good drops from the old expanded universe, which is, for those of you who don't know the phrase, that's what's now we're called Legends. These are the novels and comics that were in video games that were published outside of George Lucas' domain prior to the Disney acquisition. And so, like, one of those suggestions could be, oh, you know, maybe, so for those, Bosk, he's the Trandoshan bounty hunter shown in Empire Strikes Back, and his dad, in one of the books, is the head of the Bounty Hunter Guild. So maybe that guy's name will be dropped because the Bounty Hunters Guild existed in the expanded universe and this show is making it canon. So maybe some of the guild references or guild names. You know, I know a lot of people are hoping maybe we'll get more look into Black Sun. Maybe they'll show up in this and it could be dropped like, oh, my family was killed by Prince Zizor or Zizor. I don't know how it's said. That's the guy from Shadows of the Empire, which is another book. So it could be something like that. I mean, that's what's fun about watching a TV show is that, you know, especially when it's released serially and not binge watching, because you can stew on each episode and really think about things as it comes out. And, you know, I really hope that this is a model that other streaming services use. I just don't like how Netflix and I guess Hulu that does weekly with Handmaid's Tale after the first three. But, you know, oh, here's 10 to 15 episodes of a show. You have to watch it all now. Because it's hard to talk about that show with your friends. You're like, oh, did you watch an entire season of a television show? Like, no, I have to watch another entire season of a television show to get to it. But these weekly releases, they're more entertaining to just spend time thinking about and look for little clues like the ones I've just talked about. So beyond that little theory, a couple other fun prequels drops. The most obvious example in episode 2, which came out yesterday, which Friday the 15th, is the Mandalorian had to go get an egg, which the Jawas, I think, was Suga, Suga, or something along those lines. And he goes to a cave, and in the cave, there is a creature called a Mudhorn that really just gives him the business. And fans of the prequels will notice that, oh, the Mudhorn looks a lot like the rhino-looking thing from Attack of the Clones that was in the arena that Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme had to deal with, along with the big spider guy and the cat. They're not the exact same species. The rhino-looking thing in the Mandalorian is called, the Mudhorn, as I'd said, and the one in Attack of the Clones is called a Reek. But you could tell that they're closely related. A couple differences: the Mudhorn has one large singular horn, where the Reek has a horn at the same place, and then two smaller ones coming off of the side. It's more red and green. The Mudhorn seems to have a little bit of fur going on with it. But, you know, if you were to take a Reek and roll it around in the mud, they would look pretty darn similar. And I think it's cool that in expanding the Star Wars universe, they're doing it logically in the same way that if you just look at our own planet's ecosystem, how there are interrelated, you know, species of birds and tigers and reptiles who live in different parts of the world but have a lot of similarities. You know, the Mudhorn and the Reek are really close to, say, you know, the alligator and the crocodile. So at first glance, you think, oh, it's the same thing, but then you realize there's a couple characteristics. So, you know, how that happened and they were on different planets. I mean, they're non-sentient in the sense they're non-space travel, but it's kind of cool to think of the Force as sort of this greater entity that's playing a role in the biological advancement, the genetics of creatures. I don't know, it's just kind of fun to think that way. You know, similarly, kind of the way that the Mandalorian was tossed around by the Mudhorn was sort of how, you know, Obi-Wan was getting tossed around in the arena by the Reek. So a lot of mimicry going on there. And it was, so it's a lot of fun to watch the two scenes back to back, which I watched the show and then I watched the clip. A fun thing, you know, there is a guy in Mandalorian armor who faces the Reek, and that's, of course, Jango Fett. And Jango Fett really makes much better work of the Reek than the Mandalorian does with the Mudhorn. I mean, the Mandalorian requires the little Yoda baby to lift up the thing and spin it around in the air a few times just to catch it off guard before sticking its knife in it. It's a much more gruesome, you know, grittier battle. Where Jango, when he's on Geonosis, just shoots the Reek one time in the head and jumps out of the way. And, you know, a writer for the publication The Ringer opened the question like, oh, this is interesting. Is the Mandalorian any good? And, you know, that's debatable. Everyone seems to think he's really talented. I seem to agree with the fact. But I think rather than, oh, when you compare the Mandalorian to Jango Fett's battles against large rhino creatures and reaching the conclusion that, oh, the Mandalorian isn't good, well, I think that just goes to show just how great Jango is. You know, that Jango is really a notch above, that he is truly an all-star. You know, you could have taken the second or third best bounty hunter from Jango's era, which would be Cad Bane and Imbo, respectively, and they may have had a similar struggle with the Reek that the Mandalorian had with the Mudhorn. You know, it could be just that great of a difference, that large of a delta. So, you know, I think the whole scene makes you appreciate Jango Fett's prowess even more than you already did. Because we've been told that the Mandalorian knows what he's doing. And the fact that he has a tough time with it when his major predecessor in a similar armor, you know, dispatched a very similar creature with such ease, it just goes to show how good that guy is. Anyhow, hoping to have a guest on this week, but really, it has been one of those times where there's a lot going on for all sorts of parties, and so hopefully I'll return to the schedule of that I had kind of had going on of have a guest, then me, then guest, then me. I know these are two episodes of just me back to back, so for those of you who were like, ah, I wish I could have somebody else jabbering in my ear, I apologize, but you know what? You got me anyhow. Thanks for sticking by. I always appreciate the loyal listenership. Per usual, if you have any ideas of something you want me to talk about, just hit me up on Twitter, or you could even just leave a review on the podcast page that says do this instead. Even if it's a one-star review, I don't care. You know, it just gets the conversation going. And per usual, thanks for tuning in to CO Bibble Babble Bubble.